Welcome to the Upper Hand Podcast, where Chuck and Chris talk hand surgery.
We are two hand surgeons at Washington University in St. Louis, here to talk about all things hand surgery related, from technical to personal.
Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And thank you in advance for leaving a review and leaving a rating wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hey, Chris.
Hey, Chuck. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
It's cold. It's cold in St. Louis.
It is really cold, and I am not a winter guy.
You know, last year when we moved into this new place, we didn't really use the fireplace function too much. But this year, last night, I fired that thing up, and it felt really good. It was nice.
There are things better. I was going to say there's nothing better. It is really relaxing to have a fire and read a book and chill with the fam, at least with my wife, because the kids don't usually join me. But I really do like that.
Yes, it was relaxing in a sense that my children were asleep, the fire was on, my wife's out of town, but I was reviewing fellowship applications. That was awesome.
All I can say is thank you.
Yeah, so many. And trying to make it easier. You guys don't know this yet, but we're going to ask you this week to review a handful at least and help us get to an interview list. But fantastic applicants this year. I mean, you know, as we talked about before, and I am reading more than the letters, everybody, but taking a look and, you know, looking at attributes, I mean, there's so many great candidates out there. The future of hand surgery continues to be bright.
No doubt. Yesterday, I had the pleasure of interviewing a bunch of residency applicants. This included externs. And our policy here at WashU is if you do an extern rotation with us, then before you depart, we interview you. So I had five of those interviews. And then I had, I think it was 10 WashU student interviews. And remarkable. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that the universal offer date has been a good thing for the residency thing. I know that hand surgery hasn't quite gotten there yet. We at least now have a universal interview deadline date or application deadline date, which took a while to get to. And then I was reviewing and I was recalling when I had to turn in my hand surgery fellowship application, it actually involved getting individual letters and things to each individual program and sending everything out and different envelopes and the whole deal. So at least now there's an online system, although I know it's not perfect. It's a lot better than where we were before.
Oh, for sure. I don't remember my fellowship application process. I'm sure it was, you know, the stone tablets were hard to carve for the application process, but I do know I applied to either four or five places and thankfully it all worked out.
Well, I mean, how's your typewriter doing? Remember, you probably put it on one of those, right?
Well, for college applications, for sure. And it was one of the really advanced ones where you could sort of kind of correct.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about today? I think you picked a cool article for us to discuss, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of my roles in the department is to think about practice growth and strategy. And I really enjoy reading about marketing. I would never claim to be a marketing expert. But there was a good article in Harvard Business Review by a gentleman named Bill Taylor. I don't know that I've read other work of his, but it's called Your Competitors Aren't Always Who You Think They Are. And I thought it was a really interesting read.
I think it was great. I mean, you know, I think that even if you're not into marketing, in healthcare, you have to be into the experience. You know, so it's the patient experience. It's not a client experience. It's not a, you're not trying to sell a product, but in a sense, we kind of are in charge of an experience. And if you think about it that way, I mean, I think the article is incredibly relevant.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, when I think about the St. Louis market, you know, we have a few large, you and I are, you know, Washington University Orthopedics, part of the faculty practice plan. We are aligned with a large hospital system called Barnes Jewish Christian, and we compete against, and we do compete against, two other large systems. One is Mercy, and the other is Sisters of St. Mary's, which recently acquired the academic practices at St. Louis University. So those are two of our competitors. And our third competitor, without a question, is the private practice orthopedic surgeon groups in the region.
Right. And I think that, you know, patients, I think, seek care within different healthcare systems for a reason. Sometimes they appreciate the BJC brand and the WashU brand and they go with that. And sometimes it's because their care providers are within those networks and, you know, referral patterns are key. My personal, like when I started and I was looking for a primary care doctor, I could not find one in the BJC WashU system. So my primary care doctor is in the Mercy system. And interestingly enough, because of what we've talked about in during my visits and whatever, he's actually started sending me a lot of patients for Wallant. Yeah, so that's it's been interesting and a nice source of referrals when I see a patient who has the same primary care doctor that I do. But I think patients are willing to cross healthcare systems and go from private practice to the academic practices. But it really is more of a comes down to individual referral patterns.
Yeah, it's really interesting for the younger listeners. Narrow networks have become increasingly prominent, and that's where you're insured. And probably cost a little bit less if you agree or your employer agrees to just allow you to see a very narrow group of providers. And there's a number of examples of that in St. Louis. Boeing for a while had a contract just with Mercy. And if they wanted to see one of us, for example, there would have to be a strong reason for that to be approved. So narrow networks matter, and they, you know, their penetration in different parts of the country is different. And the other thing which is, you know, really can be challenging to physicians is the fact that some systems penalize physicians for referring outside of their system. So it sounds like your provider does not have that situation.
Yeah, I would hope not. Otherwise, he must really, really like me. You know, but I think narrow networks have become a larger concern, not only through employers, as employers drive more, you know, kind of the higher volume things to certain places, but also, as you mentioned, some of the newer insurance plans that are lower out of pocket cost, but will really tailor that you can only go to certain people for certain things. You know, and even, you know, there are still some networks that will refer you somewhere, but will keep things broad. Like even our insurance plan through WashU, they will encourage you to see somebody in WashU and make it a lot easier to get in and much less out of pocket than if you go elsewhere. So I think that's the WU Care component of it.
Yes, which I think all of us, if we have a lower out of pocket, we appreciate it. So they're achieving their goals and keeping us herded in the right direction, I guess you could say.
Right, right. So, hey, before we jump into this article a bit more, we do have to talk a bit about our friends at PracticeLink.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And it has been a relationship which you and I have enjoyed. The Upper Hand is sponsored by PracticeLink.com, the most widely used physician job search and career advancement resource. Becoming a physician is hard. Finding the right job doesn't have to be.
So join PracticeLink for free today at www.practicelink.com. And if there's anywhere on there, just say, Chuck told me to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, we've enjoyed this relationship, and hopefully it's helpful for some of our listeners as they think about current or future jobs.
So, I mean, I think PracticeLink knows all about this, and I think our listeners should know about it. But one of the quotes that they talk about in this article to start is from Bridget Van Krenlingen, a senior exec at IBM. And she says, the last best experience anyone has anywhere becomes the minimum expectation for the experience they want everywhere. So they kind of talk about this quote transcending things like buying a car to going to the to a hotel, to getting a mortgage, to even, you know, checking in for your doctor's visit. Do you think that it actually does cross over? Do you think that healthcare, you know, patients have a different expectation for healthcare? And I know that the last healthcare experience should shade how they view the next healthcare experience, but do you even think that, you know, your experience when you're going to when you're going to a movie theater is going to carry over to when you go see a doctor?
You know, it's so interesting. I don't think healthcare is held to the same standard simply because the economics of healthcare and the contracting in healthcare, all of that is different. But ultimately, patients are human beings. And if they have a great personalized experience, and the classics that you can read about or hear about are the Ritz-Carlton experience or the Disney experience, all those things that are done really well by really concierge, high-level providers, they do impact what patients expect when they see anyone, including their healthcare provider, I think.
Well, yeah, and especially if you are, say, for example, you're going outside of the kind of standard American healthcare and you're doing concierge medicine or, you know, the VIP medicine thing, you are going to expect a different experience, you know, and I think that I even expect something different from my dentist than I do from my primary care doctor in terms of, you know, what I'm going to be getting. But I think that, again, it's mainly against the last experience that I had in that particular realm, you know, for sure.
One of the examples they give, which I thought was super interesting, was around Toyota and the launch of Lexus. And prior to Lexus as a luxury brand, Toyota was widely held to be a very reliable, very uninspired choice for automobile. And the concept that a company like that could compete against the most luxury of brands, BMW, Mercedes, Cadillac, was really surprising. And yet they pulled it off.
Because they have all those awesome Christmas commercials with the red bow on top of the car.
I love
that. I mean, if anybody still watches commercials, I'm sure they come up in your TikTok feeds now, Chuck. But
so one sign that you're getting old is there are a few commercials that I could see 100 times. Every time it would bring me joy.
Right.
And and my wife hates it when I laugh out loud again and again and again in some of these commercials.
Is the other one is that he went to Jared? See, got him.
No, that is not one.
So, you know, they talk about how Lexus has tried to stay on the cutting edge and has, you know, even adapted some things that have been used in other spheres. So they, you know, really were impressed well into the development of the Lexus brand and establishment of it, but they were impressed by the Genius Bars in an Apple store. Then they went ahead and created their own version of that. I mean, so I think it's looking for experienced things that work in other industries that may or may not be close to yours, and adapting them. And can you think of any examples of that in the healthcare space? I mean, I know that we're trying to be better about the patient experience in you know, in our clinics, but and I think in healthcare we're a little slow to adopt some of these things.
Well, one that I think all of us will roll our eyes a bit, and I think it's a fine line, is patient feedback reviews. You know, when you go to your car dealer, you're hit on the head with five stars or nothing. You know, we got to have five stars. And, you know, increasingly that is important in healthcare as well, because Google reviews matter and other reviews matter. And I'll tell you, I got a one-star review from a patient, and I was on my mission trip. I got a one-star review. It came across my email, and I'm like, oh, my God. Because a lot of times you kind of know those patients, and I racked my brain for who it was. I couldn't remember, and I shouldn't go into the details. But suffice it to say, I never operated on this patient and was given a one-star review because the reviewer was talking about his daughter, and just the whole thing was crazy, but I take those things to heart. But sorry, I'm getting off target.
Clearly, but you take it to heart.
But I mean, the review system is something we've learned, I think, from others.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's really important. I think that's where, you know, and you and I have talked about this in various venues, and I include it in some of the lectures that I give, but I mean, patients, we are people. So like, even like when I am trying to find a healthcare provider for some sort, I will Google them. And, you know, you can't help but be attracted to somebody who has all five stars, or you can't help but say, hey, what's going on, when somebody has anything less than, you know, 4 point something. You know, it doesn't mean, I think we're a little more discerning and we'll try to look at the backstory and understand that patients, you know, may leave lower than, you know, less than stellar reviews because of, you know, they couldn't find parking, or because the front desk staff was rude, or because we were running late. It's not a reflection of the actual care provided. It's more about the delivery of the experience. That stuff really matters. The online reviews. I mean, you know, I think that that's one way in which patients have been more empowered to reflect their experience. Where I thought you were going to go with this was patient scheduling of appointments, direct patient scheduling.
Well, that is very interesting. And so I think what you're getting at, you know, patients want control, and especially younger patients want control and ease of access. So picking up the phone and calling our schedulers, no matter how wonderful they are, is not as simple as clicking a few buttons on your phone or computer. And so some of our subspecialties now, including hand most recently, now have the ability for patients to schedule online. It's carefully curated and limited in diagnoses, et cetera. But it's a fantastic step forward, and it's a win for everyone, for you, for me, for our schedulers who are overworked and have a crazy burden, and most importantly, it's a win for the patients. So totally agree, that's a great example.
Yeah, I think there are some times where there can be some patients that are scheduled inappropriately, just because, you know, like they think one thing, and then perhaps they're with the wrong provider, doctor. Largely, I think it's a step in the right direction. In thinking about the patient experience, I mean, I think that, you know, one of the thing that bothers people a lot is waiting. And the difficulty of, I guess the term is wayfinding, like from when you are trying to figure out where to go and where to park and where to walk. And you know, honestly, the big academic medical campus is not good for that. There are things like, you know, parking valet and all that kind of stuff that are helpful. But some people, especially I think in the Midwest, like just want to drive up, like they're going to Best Buy and drive and park in the parking lot and walk in and see the doctor and get on their way, which is why places like our outpatient centers, like the orthopedic center for me, the South County facility are great. And when patients, like when I see people at the main campus and I know that they don't need any, you know, specialized stuff for follow-up in our like complex nerve clinic, I'll tell them, look, I know it might be a little bit longer of a drive, but you'll probably have a better experience if we just do your follow-up in South County.
Totally agree. Better experience. And actually it'll be a time saver ultimately. I mean, if I was a healthcare consumer and had the choice of seeing any type of physician in a simple environment versus the massive hospital complex with parking, et cetera, You go simple. I think that's a message from our society. So one of the examples in the article is around the Savannah Bananas. Did we talk about that? I've been fascinated by this story.
No, I actually was about to try to figure out how I can watch this 5-part documentary on ESPN about it. So I'm not as educated on this.
So it's for those of you who don't know what the Savannah Bananas are, it's a minor league baseball team that has antics on the field, but strategic innovations off the field, including, as the authors of this article say, they have simplified the economics of attending a game, revolutionized the experience of being in the stands, et cetera, et cetera. What my brain leaps to with this is thinking about who's doing innovative things in healthcare. And one example is in Oklahoma, there's a surgery center that has published all of their fees. They've done it for 5-10 years. And it's a very simple way for the healthcare consumer to understand exactly what the carpal tunnel or the ACL is going to cost. And one could argue strongly that we should all be doing this in a very coherent way. But when this Oklahoma Surgery Center did it, they were absolutely ahead of the game. And I think we're all heading in that direction.
Well, and honestly, because they're the first in the space, patients search for this and this is what they find. You know, I think that, so that's important. And, you know, on a larger scale, there's been all sorts of experiments done on reference pricing for things like hip and knee replacement, particularly in California. And, you know, once patients understand a little bit more about how the sausage is made and start to look into pricing and for things that are high volume and relatively routine, like a hip and knee replacement, like a carpal tunnel, you know, I think that empowers them. And perhaps it's good that, you know, it encourages more competition, more questioning about how we do things and how we price things. So I think that level of innovation and transparency is going to be the way to go. It's just a matter of how long it's going to take for our monolith of a healthcare system to change.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I love a couple of sentences, which I'd love to just read out loud. The problem is not that organizations are inefficient or out of touch. The problem is that they are narrow-minded. And narrow-minded organizations don't lend themselves to breakthrough strategy. And this is another quote. We are living in a new world, he told me. He is Lior Arusi. We're living in a new world, he told me. Customers no longer accept an okay job. It's exceptional or nothing. Impress me, surprise me, do something I'll remember. That's what customers want. That's what organizations have to deliver. And in healthcare, it's obviously a different experience, but that holds, right? Being fine or being okay, or I went to the doctor and had a good experience. That doesn't lead to anything positive. What we want is nothing impresses a patient like getting in and out, having warm, caring team of providers. We can do better. And, you know, certainly at WashU are trying to, but it's not easy. As you said, it's a big, big system and it's hard to change.
I'll pull a Goldfarb, two things. So the first being that there are so many touch points and moments in time where the patient experience can go south that happen before they see the physician, which, you know, in looking at our Press Ganey surveys that we get back every month, when I get that email, I cringe and then I have to open it and read the comments. And usually I'm very pleasantly surprised by, you know, what people have said. But, you know, as you know, people who are upset or more likely to leave comments, as you talked about with your Google thing. Even if you never did surgery or only had very limited interactions, et cetera, they want to make sure that they are heard, kind of like when somebody burns your pizza and doesn't give you the drink that you wanted at the restaurant, you're more likely to, you know, say, hey, this is my way of getting back. But I think that there's so many points in which that experience can go south. And if we streamlining things can only get rid of some of those pain points, and revolutionizing how the experience, I think, will help. It's just so hard to blow that up in terms of the entire, healthcare experience. For me, for the Plexus is where I think that I can probably make a difference in that experience. We're trying with the Plexus to really re-examine the whole healthcare experience for them, because it's a small, definable volume of patients where we can really, you know, try to make a difference in what patients go through. So we're trying to do that. Eventually, we're trying to get, you know, a patient navigator or coach that can be their, you know, main touch point the entire way to help them get through the, I don't know what's going on. When's my nerve study? When's my MRI? Am I having surgery? Am I not having surgery? Do I see a hand therapist now? That kind of thing. And eventually, we want to continue to use that person to educate and to help get them through the entire 1 year, 2 year, 5 year process after surgery. I don't know how well that's going to go, but that's the small area, I think, in my practice where I think we can make a difference. And if we establish a model of how to do that, then I think we can try to disseminate that elsewhere.
So it's super admirable. And there is no doubt that patients would be happy with that experience. You would be happy. Outcomes would likely be better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The problem, of course, that the margins in healthcare make it hard to pay for that navigator. And that's tough. Ultimately, you know, we try to do the right thing. And if that model can be demonstrated to help, you know, we would try to find a way to make it happen.
Right. And that's where, you know, we're going to be in the process of trying to apply for, you know, grant funding, foundation funding to set up the model, test the model, validate and show how it works and how it improves the experience. But like you said, like that kind of thing is not, that is an altruistic kind of thing at this point that will not make any money. Plexus already doesn't make money, so at least in the US. And it is one of those things where you do it because it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. So as we bring this to a close, you know, we've talked around the central premise of the article, which is that, you know, you and I and our department shouldn't just think about the quote unquote competition in our region. And honestly, I think the competition is not just in our region, it's across the country as we try to attract patients across the world. But we need to look at what the best, most efficient, highest patient and customer satisfaction organizations, what they do. And I think it's really good advice. And, you know, don't limit yourselves to just thinking about what your competition is doing.
Absolutely. Your competition isn't always who you think it is. But, and we can learn a lot, because I think you put yourself back into the shoes of being the patient, being the consumer, and then you're like, oh yeah, that was great, or that was not great. You know, so I think constantly having that refresher and that reminder is going to help us improve the overall experience.
Absolutely. All right. This was fun. Have a good day.
You too. See you later.
Hey, Chris, that was fun. Let's do it again real soon.
Sounds good. Well, be sure to check us out on Twitter at Hand Podcast. Hey, Chuck, what's your Twitter handle?
Mine is at Congenital Hand. What about you?
Mine is at Chris DMD, spelled DY. And if you'd like to email us, you can reach us at handpodcast@gmail.com.
And remember, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast.
And be sure to leave a review. That helps us get the word out.
Special thanks to Peter Martin for the amazing music. And remember, keep the upper hand and come back next time.